It's now time for Law Talk with Brad on Talk Radio 1370 AM. He's here to take your questions regarding law and estate planning at 390-1370. And now, here's attorney Brad Wewell.
Good morning, everybody. This is Brad Wewell. This is Law Talk with Brad, and we are here on a hot Saturday morning. Ah, what a surprise, right? I'm not sure it's going to get to 100 today, but I'll bet good money it will. It's a few clouds out there, but you know, one thing I asked Cindy this week, my beautiful wife Cindy, who's out there on the phones this morning, waiting to take your calls, I said, you know, if we got a 20% chance of rain, right, which is usually what we have every day, shouldn't it rain every 5 days? But I don't think it works that way for some reason. So if anybody knows why it doesn't work that way, that would be fine. I'd appreciate some direction on that. So I'm not too optimistic, but I remain prayerful that we'll get some rain and get a bunch of it soon, that's for sure. We are here talking about estate planning this morning. This is an estate planning show. We talk about wills. We talk about trusts. We talk about powers of attorney. We talk about asset protection. I've been talking a lot about that recently. I spoke yesterday to a group of certified financial planners about asset protection, and then I spoke yesterday also to a group of CPAs about asset protection. Asset protection is a hot area, and a lot of people are very concerned about losing their assets in this economy. They've already lost a ton in the real estate and maybe the stock market, and they just don't want to lose any more to a lawsuit. So we can talk about that this morning if you've got some questions about that. We can talk about charitable planning. We can talk about end-of-life issues. We can talk about anything you want to talk about regarding estate planning. So give us a call at 390-1370, 390-1370, and I will be happy to take your call. I'll be happy to answer your question. I'll be happy to give you some direction in your life as far as any of these things go, and hopefully either give you a little more peace of mind about it or give you enough to be concerned about that you'll actually take some action on it. The problem in estate planning is this is something that we're going to get around to tomorrow. Mañana, and mañana sometimes comes today, and people aren't ready, and it's a real shame and a real problem. Okay, 390-1370, 390-1370. You can also email me. We have an email address, and our email address for the show is askbrad@wewell.us. That's askbrad@wiewel.us, and we can answer your email over the air and give you an answer and get you on down the road too. All right, so askbrad@wewell.us. I've got an email question here, and it's from Fishy Business in Texas, and I'm going to get to that in just a minute. But before I do, Cindy woke up this morning, read the Austin American Statesman, and said, honey, honey, here's a story you ought to tell people about on the radio show, because, honey, what you need to do is you need to make the show more funny. Because it's sometimes kind of, honey, kind of too serious because we're talking about death, dying, dismemberment, disability, blah, blah, blah. So perk it up. So here you go. There's a great story here in the Austin American Statesman about Marilyn Monroe. And folks, this may be the opportunity of a lifetime. You can be buried on, I guess literally on top of Marilyn Monroe. Kind of weird, but here you go. The story is that a gentleman years ago, Richard Pontschier, bought a crypt in a mausoleum in Los Angeles. His crypt is immediately above the crypt that Marilyn Monroe is buried in. So when people come to see Marilyn Monroe, they look up and they see Richard's crypt right there. Well, Richard's in there, I guess, or what's left of Richard is in there. And his widow wants to sell the crypt, and she's going to move Richard to, I guess, another crypt, a whole lot cheaper crypt. And she's going to auction it off, sell it off, put it on eBay, get rid of it in hopes of raising $1.6 million. This is a very nice crypt, I guess. Maybe it's padded and maybe scented. It probably is a little scented right now, Snoop, hate to tell you. But, you know, I guess $1.6 million crypt ought to be pretty nice, gold-laden, I don't know. But I think actually it's the old real estate adage, location, 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 right? So she wants to sell the crypt above Marilyn Monroe and try to raise $1.6 million pay off her mortgage, which is, you know, smart thing. You're older in life, and you don't want to have any debts, and she doesn't. Apparently, she's got this big house, obviously a big house with a $1.6 million mortgage. So she's selling it, yes, on eBay, and opening bids, $500,000. And, you know, it just may be what you want. You'd have to have a little heck of a balance in your credit card, I guess, to bid on it through eBay or PayPal or whatever. But if you're up this morning and you've been kind of thinking, what do I do with all this spare money I've got, this may be your opportunity of a lifetime to do it. It looks like Natalie Wood is buried in this mausoleum, Dean Martin, Roddy Dangerfield, Merv Griffin, Mel Torme, Truman Capote. Farrah Fawcett was buried there a couple weeks ago. Hugh Hefner is there, or going to be there. Not there yet, I guess. Sorry, Hugh. That guy keeps living on. I don't know what the deal is with Hugh. But if I was Hugh, I'd want to keep living because I'm not sure I know where Hugh's going to go after this life is over. But apparently he bought the crypt right next to Maryland, and he paid $75,000 in 1992. So you'll be candy quarter from Hugh Hefner. You'll be above Marilyn Monroe. This is a dream come true, folks. So check out eBay and check out the crypt above Marilyn Monroe. If this is your dream for eternity, we can set you up. See, we're full service here at Law Talk with Brad. We have got it all going here, and hopefully that makes my wife Cindy happy because it's a kind of a funny little story, and she likes those. So our call-in number, folks, is 390-1370, 390-1370. So give us a call this morning if we can help you with any kind of estate planning question. Again, wills, trust, probate, asset protection, Medicaid planning, living wills to pull the plug, pet planning. We can talk about that again, asset protection planning, business planning. If you got a partner, you need to buy, sell. How does that work? 390-1370, 390-1370. Okay, we have an email here that I'm going to get to now, and this was sent in last Saturday after the show, and Fishy Business in Texas was apparently listening, which I appreciate. And here's a question. In Texas, Brad, if a durable general power of attorney is recorded at the Travis County Records Office, must a notice of revocation of power of attorney be sent to the person being revoked? Must it be sent by certified mail? Must it be recorded at the county records office as well? Boy, that's a very good question. And it used to be in the old days, so the old days are like 1996 and 1997, and really kind of, I think it stopped in 1997. I think the legislature in 97 passed a law that said you no longer have to record powers of attorney. But for a period of years in there, when somebody did a durable general power of attorney, you had to record it at the courthouse. Now, a durable general power of attorney, for the benefit of all our listeners, is a document that you give someone, theoretically, and oftentimes it's just theoretically, but oftentimes it's real, the person that you give the durable general power of attorney to can write checks on your behalf, can sell real estate on your behalf, can make any kind of financial decision or almost any kind of financial decision that you could make for yourself. And you give them this giant permission slip, and that's why it's called a general power of attorney. They can do things of a massive scale. It's called durable because it lasts and continues to be valid even after the person who made it is incapacitated. So you can have it. You can give somebody the permission today. If tomorrow you have the stroke, the fall, the car wreck, some sort of disease, and you can't make financial decisions, and the person with the power of attorney, if it's durable, they can continue to make financial decisions for you even after you're incapacitated. That's how it's supposed to work. Sometimes it doesn't. That's why people have living trusts, because living trusts are more certain to work. But let's go back to the question that Fishy Business in Texas has. Apparently, there is a durable power of attorney that has been recorded at the county clerk's office here in Austin. And it looks like Fishy Business wants to revoke it and put somebody else on and take off the person that she originally had on there. And so the question is, again, do I need to send the person I'm revoking the power to a notice by certified mail? And do I need to record the revocation at the courthouse? And the answer to the first one is it's probably not a bad idea to notify the person that you are revoking their power. If it's somebody you know very well, which it probably is, you can tell them. Send it to them by certified mail is probably a good idea because you want to put them on notice. And if later they use your power of attorney and they've been revoked, you've got evidence that you told them that you had revoked it and that they were no longer authorized to use it. We don't want somebody out there, and that's, I think, your question too, using your power of attorney who's not allowed to, and they would come in later and say, well, Judge, gosh, I didn't know that you'd revoked it. I didn't know that I wasn't on it. I thought I was still on it. And you may come in and say, well, I told him, but there's no proof. And so, yes, send it certified mail to the person that you're revoking. The second thing is I also believe you should record the revocation at the county courthouse too. And the reason for that is that title companies, real estate title companies, banks, other financial institutions may rely on the document that's in the courthouse. Again, if your agent, who you just revoked, shows up with the power of attorney, they don't know that it's been revoked. The institutions don't know that it's been revoked. This person with the power of attorney may say, well, check the courthouse. It's on file. There's no revocation on file. And the financial institution may go ahead and let this person get some money from your accounts, and that would not be, of course, what you want either. So if you've already got it on file, which, again, ladies and gentlemen, you don't have to file them anymore. It's very rare to file them. We would not recommend that you file it because, again, if you want to revoke it, you have to file it in the courthouse. But since it's already on file, I would certainly do a revocation. You're going to have to notarize the revocation. Have it acknowledged by a notary public because the clerk's office is not going to file anything that's not notarized. But get it notarized. I'm revoking Joni's power under my power of attorney. I'm removing them as an agent. And you probably ought to do another one to put somebody else on, but don't file the new one. But file the revocation at the courthouse. And then what happens under Texas law is that once something's on file at the courthouse, then all the financial institutions and the real estate title companies and the public in general are on official notice that this revocation has occurred. And if somebody lets this person with your power of attorney use it, then you might have more recourse against that institution for letting the wrong person have your money. So that's a great question. Don't file it in the first place, but if it's filed and you're going to change it or revoke it, file the revocation. That would be a smart thing to do. So hope that helps. All right. Good question. Durable powers of attorney. You know, they sometimes work. They sometimes don't work. A lot of people prefer these days to do a revocable living trust. No financial institution has to honor a power of attorney, and a lot of them do not. And the older it is, the less likely they are to honor it. And if it's from out of state, really good luck on that too. And so it's important if you want to make sure that you've got money at some institution, that your spouse, that your adult child, that your friend, that somebody can access it and pay your bills and make sure you're okay after you're incapacitated, then you need to give some serious thought to a revocable living trust because it's going to be a more certain thing. These institutions have to accept the living trust, but they do not have to accept the power of attorney. Now, if you've just got your money in a bank or a credit union, they tend to be better about accepting powers of attorney, but there's nothing automatic about it. I was given a talk to a credit union about 6 months ago, I guess, and learned that this one credit union here in Austin has got a policy that they don't accept powers of attorney if they're over 6 months old. Some institutions, they won't accept them if they're over 60 days old. Some institutions won't accept it if it's over a year old. Well, holy cow. I mean, you're doing one today, and we're hoping that you don't become incapacitated anytime soon. So that's a little, some people say, oh, it's unreasonable. But these institutions, folks, are scared to death that they're going to give the money to the wrong person that you have revoked it. They don't know that you revoked it. And they give the money to the wrong person, and they get sued. And frankly, they don't like paying their lawyers any more than anybody else does, which always kind of hurts me a little bit, Snoop. It's just kind of a, why is that? They don't. So they may just say, no thanks, no thanks. We're not going to honor the power of attorney. And then if it's not honored, the family has to go to court, get someone appointed as guardian of the incapacitated person. That could lead to a nice court fight. If there are children involved, stepchildren in particular, expensive, big, long hassle, because a guardianship over somebody's money will last until that person passes away. And if they are going to linger for 3, 4, 5, 15 years, you know, the sound you're going to hear in the background is cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. It's just going to be very expensive. Constant court supervision. The guardian's going to have to post a bond. It's nothing you want. So get some good estate planning, and you can avoid that. And that's the goal of all good estate planning, frankly, is to avoid a guardianship if possible and keep people out of court. Okay, we're going to take a break. Our call-in number is 390-1370, 390-1370. You can email me this morning and ask Brad. AskBrad at WIEWEL.US. And I'm going to take a break. When I come back, we'll talk about some more stuff about estate planning. Thanks.
Law Talk with Brad will continue in a moment on Talk Radio 1370 AM. Welcome back to Law Talk with Brad on Talk Radio 1370 AM.
All right. Welcome back. This is Brad Wewell. This is Law Talk with Brad, and we're taking your calls this morning about estate planning at 390-1370, 390-1370. And we'd love to hear from you about anything that's on your mind. If we can talk about a will or a trust or a power of attorney or a medical power of attorney or pull the plug or asset protection, business planning, charitable planning, special needs planning. Had a couple discussions this week about special need planning, we can talk about that where you've got a developmentally disabled child. There's a lot of things you can do to really benefit that person long-term with some careful planning. And we could also talk about probate, whatever you want to talk about, 390-1370, 390-1370. You can also email me again at AskBrad at wewell.us, AskBrad at WIEWEL.us. Okay, there is more on Michael Jackson. Can't stand it. Here we go. And Michael is not buried yet. It took about a year and a half to get James Brown buried. Michael Jackson's body is in a deep freeze someplace in Hollywood. And the family continues to find out where to bury him, whether to bury him in Forest Lawn, whether to bury him out at Neverland Ranch. Who the heck knows? And it's a sad thing. One of the things that we do in our office now is we provide our clients with a document that says who gets to make burial or cremation decisions. It's a binding document, and we also let our clients decide and say, I want to be buried, I want to be cremated. What's interesting about all that is the vast number of people that are choosing cremation. I mean, probably 90% of our clients are choosing cremation. And I think they're choosing cremation because it's cheaper, a little more portable, and I think also that people don't have quite the sense of place anymore. I mean, we move around so much, and so there's, you know, the point of going to a graveyard, and this is where all the family is, and this is where your grandparents are, and your parents are, and your kids will be here, doesn't exist so much anymore. So anyway, we'll keep track of poor old Michael Jackson's burial and see if we can get that guy buried. All right, it looks like we've got a call, and I appreciate it. Julie on line one. Julie, this is Brad Wewell. What can I help you with?
I was wanting some guidance on will planning. I guess I've got stepchildren, two adults and one almost, and we have quite a bit of property, and just wondering how you make sure if you can just split it three ways or if we're both gone.
Yeah, you can.
What age you would want them to have things, if you should put a limit on that so they don't spend it all.
Julie, sounds like you know those kids a little bit. And
right?
Yeah, right. Well, you know, and it's funny with inheritances because you and your husband have a completely different perspective on your estate than those kids do, right?
Right.
And that's pretty normal. The average estate, the average inheritance, Julie, this is, you might have heard me say this before, but if you haven't, you might want to sit down when I tell you this. The average inheritance lasts about 18 months, start to finish.
Wow.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter, apparently, according to the study, how old they were when they got it or how much they got. It's pretty much spent. So let me give you some thoughts on this, and I'm going to ask you a personal question, too, and I don't mean to be provocative, but it's important. How well do you get along with these kids?
Very well.
Okay. You're kind of like the mother at this point, too?
Yes.
All right. Because sometimes, as you know, stepchildren situations can be a little challenging.
Well, it can change tomorrow if, you know, somebody else wasn't, if my spouse wasn't around, everybody can change.
And they do change sometimes. And, our kind of little mantra is that money makes people funny.
Yes.
So, first thing you'd want to do in any good estate plan is make sure you're prepared, you're protected from a challenge from these kids, okay? And there's a lot of little things that can happen to make sure that if later their dad dies and you feel put upon and pressured, that there are some things that you can have in your toolkit to really prepare you and protect you from a challenge. But that's not really your question. Your question is, okay, let's say everything goes smooth, Brad. How exactly is the best way to give it to them? And a couple thoughts on that, Julie. One would be rather than, I mean, you can certainly do three equal shares, and I would recommend that you do separate shares. Sometimes we'll see people coming in with a will or a trust that has what we would call a common trust or a pot trust, and it's just one big bucket of money, and everybody kind of dips into it and gets it out, and that can cause a lot of fighting. So three separate shares, so neither kid has to worry about how much the other one's spending or how it's being invested. But what we typically recommend at the We Will Law Firm anyway is for you and your husband to consider, rather than leaving them an age at which they get it, maybe leave an age at which they get control of it. And what I might recommend, and probably would recommend, given the fact that you've got a substantial estate, is you leave it to the kids in what I would call a checkbook trust. And a checkbook trust, Julie, is a trust where rather than leaving the cash, you leave the kids the checkbook. You pick an age at which they get signing rights on the checks. So maybe 30, 35, 40. I have a client the other week, 55. There you go. Now that might be a little old. But, you know, I don't know the kids. But the point is, if you leave it to them in a checkbook trust, Julie, then if they later get divorced, this won't get tied up in a divorce. And if they later get sued, their inheritance won't get tied up in a lawsuit. And if they later, for some unforeseen deal, have to file bankruptcy because they aren't very good with their own money, their money that you've left them won't get tied up in their bankruptcy either. And if they really do have a challenge with money, then you can put somebody else over their money and allow that adult child to change their trustee from time to time so they feel like they have some control. Does that all make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Well, sure. That's just, you know, it's there are so many things that can happen out there, and obviously along the way your husband got divorced, and, you know, people don't think that's going to happen to their kids, and it does, and nobody's going to get sued, and they do. So, yeah, give some serious thought to this, and I think that there's a way to get it and get it set up and have the kids happy with it and have you and your husband very satisfied with it. And also, let me remind you again, look after you and protect you.
Okay.
Okay?
That's great.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, and have a great weekend.
Bye.
All right, bye. Okay, looks like James on line two. James, this is Brad Wewell, Law Talk with Brad. I appreciate you calling. What can I help you with?
Good morning, Brad. James. An entertaining show. I just discovered it this morning, and entertaining and very timely. Can you tell me what is the probability of successfully contesting a properly drafted will, and what sort of burden is on the executrix to make sure there's no problems of cropping?
Well, Good question. And, in fact, the law on that is fixing to change. Because,
great, okay.
Yeah, well, and not in favor of the heir, let me tell you. Well, actually, looking at it, and giving it a second thought, it probably will change a little bit in favor of the heir. Here's what a properly drawn will, James, is going to have something in it called a no contest clause. And sometimes the Latin term is an interorum clause. It means to terrorize the heir. And it says, look, if you're going to challenge this will or this revocable living trust, and we put them in both, if you challenge it, you're going to get cut out.
Really?
And you bet. Heck yeah. And you're going to have to stare down the barrel of the shotgun and decide, can I duck this bullet and achieve my goal of breaking the will, or am I just stuck with what's here? Because if you're an heir in the will and you challenge it, you'll get nothing. Now, it may be, James, that you're not an heir in the will. Do you know if you're in this will?
No, I do not.
All right. You may not know, and you won't know that, of course, until, you know, she dies, he dies, and it's filed for probate. Now, once it's filed for probate, the will becomes public, and then you can see if you're actually in there or not, and then you can, if there's a no contest clause in there or not, okay?
Now, and that would dictate, that no contest clause would dictate whether or not you want to run the risk of challenging the will.
That is correct. So if you're a beneficiary after she dies, or a beneficiary, frankly, on the first death, and there's a no contest clause, right. Now, what the law that's the change in the law that's going to affect, I think, September 1st, is going to say if an heir challenges the will in good faith and has probable cause to challenge it and continues to maintain the lawsuit in good faith and probable cause, then the no contest clause is not effective. Okay?
Okay.
So it's more than just being irritated or ticked off that you didn't get as much as you wanted. You're going to have to go into court and show that there was some fraud, that there was some undue influence, that the will wasn't executed correctly, that there was something going on that stunk to high heaven when this thing happened, and judge, this will needs to be set aside. And by the way, since I'm doing it in good faith, judge, please don't cut me out. Okay?
When would that challenge be made?
Well, there's two opportunities to do that. That's another good question. The two opportunities are before the will is admitted to probate and after the will is admitted to probate. Okay. Now, before the will is admitted to probate, and what I mean by that is the will has been filed at the courthouse and an application to file to probate the will has been also filed at the courthouse. If you come in and challenge the will before the judge says it's a valid will, and that's a temporary ruling by the court, because that can also be challenged later, but it's an important temporary ruling. Because if you come in before the judge slams his gavel and says this is a valid will and I'm admitting it into probate, if you challenge it prior to then the burden of proving that your dad was competent when he signed the will be on his wife. She'll have to come in with proof to show that he was competent enough to make a will, that he knew what he was doing, and you put the pressure and the burden of proving that on her. That's a big deal.
Yes.
If the court has already admitted the will to probate and slammed the gavel and says, well, from all appearances, from what I know now, this appears to be a valid will, and I'm going to appoint an executor and get this administration going, you can still challenge the will. You've got 4 years to challenge the will. But from that point on, the burden of proof is going to be on you to prove that your dad lacked competence to execute the will. So if he was suffering from Alzheimer's, dementia, some brain disease or disability or impairment, you're going to have to bring in the evidence, and you're going to have to convince the judge. If you do that prior to the will being admitted to probate, she has to prove all that. Okay?
I've always had the understanding that going through probate, the initial process was pretty perfunctory, just straight through. Boom,
it
boom,
is.
Boom, boom, boom.
It is. So you've got to be alert, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, honestly, the probate's going to be held in the county where your father passed away. And if that's Travis County, Austin, that's fine, Georgetown, whatever. And if he's out of state, is he in Texas or out of state?
Texas.
All right. So wherever county he's living now, she doesn't have to rush down and file the darn thing either. And let me repeat what I said because I want to make sure you're clear. Once the will's filed, it's a public record, and they have to give notice to the public that they're going to have a hearing, but they don't have to give you notice that they're going to have a hearing. They have to give you notice eventually, but not until if you're in the will, they have to give you notice, but not until after the will's been admitted to probate. So when your father passes away, which it sounds like he's still alive now, is that correct?
No.
He's already died?
Yes.
All right. Then you need to be alert, and I'd be checking with the county probably every 2 or 3 days. It'll be the county clerk's office and the probate section of the county clerk's office to see if the will's been filed and see if it's been admitted to probate. If it hasn't, then you hire a lawyer and go in and try to challenge it early on. You can at least see it then and see if there's a no contest clause and see if you're an heir or a beneficiary or a legatee, whatever you want to call it, under this will. If you're not a beneficiary or heir, then, James, the no contest clause doesn't really apply to you because you're not going to get anything anyway. So you might as well challenge it, I suppose, if you can find a lawyer that will help you with it.
Very helpful advice, Brad.
Okay, James. Well, I appreciate that. That's what we're in business here to do, is to kind of give people direction. And so, anyway, good luck, Godspeed, and I'll wish you well.
Thanks, sir.
You bet. Have a great weekend. All right. Good questions. All right. Call the number 390-1370, 390-1370, and I'm going to take a break. I want to come back. If we got more calls, we'll take more calls, and we'll talk about some other fun stuff, too. See you on the other side of the break. Thanks.
Law Talk with Brad will continue in a moment on Talk Radio 1370 AM. Welcome back to Law Talk with Brad on Talk Radio 1370 AM.
Right. Welcome back. This is Brad Wewell. This is Law Talk with Brad. I want to just talk a minute about the Wewell Law Firm. We get a lot of calls on the show, and we certainly would be happy to sit down with anybody who listens about considering doing some estate planning. I'm board certified in estate planning and probate by the Texas Board of Legal Specialization. We have 4 excellent lawyers at our law firm. I'm there. Doug Paul is there. Candace Bocock is there. Steve Van Winkle is there. And we just do estate planning. That's all we do, and we do an excellent job for the folks that want our help. We have 2 offices, and soon we'll have 3. We have 1 office in Austin at 1601 Rio Grande, which is just off 15th in Rio Grande, near downtown, but not all the way downtown, about halfway between I-35 and Mopac on 15th Street. We've got an office in Georgetown at 1618 Williams Drive. And Williams Drive is the main drag between I-35 and Sun City in Georgetown. And we're going to open an office September 1st out in the Highland Lakes area around Marble Falls and Horseshoe Bay. So if you're out there and you'd rather meet us out there, that's fine. If you'd rather meet us in Georgetown, that's fine. If you'd rather come into our Austin office, that's fine too. We don't charge for the first meeting. So the first meeting is complimentary. And you're welcome to come in. We're happy to give you a second opinion on some planning that you've done. We're happy to start from scratch. A lot of people come in and have known they needed to do this for a long time, haven't yet done it, and we start and get you fixed up and get you where you need to go. We can talk about anything that's going on out there in your personal life. Everything's confidential, of course, and all meetings at our offices are by appointment only. So you can call us. Our Austin number is 390-390. Excuse me, that's this number. Our Austin number is 480-8828, 480-8828. Georgetown number, 869-1435, 869-1435. And you can go to our website, and I'll tell you, folks, we have a very, very, very good website. It's texastrustlaw.com, texastrustlaw.com. It's simple. It's easy to navigate. You can listen to old shows. You can learn about our firm. You can go to our video link, and we have 81 two-minute videos that are just me talking about different aspects of estate planning. You can go to our library, and you can read articles. We have 12 articles up all the time about estate planning, and this month's article is about unique estate and financial challenges for women. But you can also read about estate planning for unmarried couples and charitable planning and beneficiary designations and for single planning. So anyway, our website's good. We also have a legal glossary on there, too, to help you define some of the terms that we use here on Law Talk with Brad. So our website, again, TexasTrustLaw.com, TexasTrustLaw.com. All right, let's see. What else is out there? We talked about poor old Michael Jackson. Can't get that poor guy buried. Jermaine Jackson's the one holding it up. And to wrap up on that, his family kind of wants him buried in Forest Lawn, where Marilyn Monroe, near there. And Jermaine is working with the people that own the Neverland Ranch and want him buried out there. And Jermaine's on the payroll of the people that own the Neverland Ranch. So what a surprise. Okay, Candace Bocock, who helps me put this show together, is out vacationing on Lake LBJ. And we have a little lake house on Lake LBJ, and Lake LBJ is a really, really, really nice lake. And the nicest thing about Lake LBJ is that it's a constant level lake, so we have plenty of water. It's gone down probably a full quarter of an inch all summer, and it's great. But I'm bringing this up because a lot of people out there do have vacation property. You may have a vacation home. You may have a little ranch. You may have a home place, a farm. You may have a lot someplace that in the future you really would like to think about building on that lot. And what I'm going to tell you is you need to give very serious consideration to putting that property in either a limited partnership or a limited liability company. Land is unlike more other financial assets. You're not going to get sued because you own AT&T or IBM. But you certainly could get sued if you own a piece of real estate. And people can trip on the real estate. They can fall on the real estate. They can drown offshore on the real estate. They can fall off a horse. They can fall off a four-wheeler. They can get shot. The list goes on. And what you need to do is you need to make sure that you've got that very valuable property of yours. And it's probably valuable in two respects. It's valuable from a financial perspective, but in a lot of cases with a lot of our clients, it's really valuable from an emotional perspective. This is where the family gathers. This is where they hunt. This is where they hang out. This is where we're going to build our dream house. And if somebody gets hurt on that property, then the owner of the property most likely is going to get sued. The people suing would love to own that property. Their lawyer would love to own that property, and whatever else you've got is going to be up for grabs too. But if you've done some planning and you properly put it into a limited liability company or a limited partnership, then you can protect your assets if there's a lawsuit, and you may be able to protect that property if there's a lawsuit from another source. So one of the things that Cindy's always concerned about going out to Lake LBJ is if you live on the southwest side of town, which we do, the way you get to Lake LBJ is you go on Highway 71. And a few people have been mowed down on Highway 71 in the last year or so, and she's always scared to death that that's going to be us, and more particularly it's going to be me. Thank you, sweetie. But if I'm the one who mows somebody else down, and we get sued, then having a property, having real estate, frankly having financial assets in a limited liability company or a limited partnership will prevent them from being taken in that kind of a lawsuit too. So it's a lot of fun. You have a lot of memories. We're out there, and that's really why we ended up doing something like that, because we wanted to build a lot of memories for our family. And we thoroughly love it. But it is a liability trap and a liability waiting to happen unless proper planning is in place to protect it. So if you've got a little place out there, you've got a little ranchette or farmette or lake house or lot, you just need to make sure that you've taken every step possible to assure yourself. And when you go to bed at night, that if something happens, that you've done everything you can to protect it from the bad guys. All right. Well, thanks for listening today. It's been a quick show and a good show. I appreciate everybody who listens. I certainly appreciate everybody who calls, and we always appreciate anybody who comes into the WeWell Law Firm to talk about doing some estate planning. Our website, again, is texastrustlaw.com, texastrustlaw.com. We've got an office in Austin, an office in Georgetown, and soon to be an office out in the Highland Lakes area. And today is Saturday, and tomorrow is Sunday. I'm sure you know that. And what I think would be smart is to get to the bottom out of bed and go to church tomorrow. And you're going to be a lot better off for it, and we will all be a lot better off for it. School starts soon. If you've got kids, get them going to church. It's a good habit to start with them, too. And again, you know, families are under stress, and people are under stress. And what I get when I go to church is a much greater sense of peace. And I know that I'm not in control, and I know that God's in control, and that really makes a big difference in my life. Because if it's up to me, folks, I'm only going to screw this darn thing up. All right. We will be back next week taking your calls on Law Talk with Brad. I hope everybody has a great week, and see you then. Bye.
Tune in next week for another edition of Law Talk with Brad.